Welcome to Market View with Ike Iosa and Friends. This show that not only reveals and analyzes the inside story on today's market news, but also uncovers the areas where investors can make money right now.
Gentlemen, good morning. Ike Iosa here, your host for Market View. Today's guest, my very good friend, Mr. Frank Barbera. Hi, Frank. How are you?
Good morning, Ike. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I'm really excited to have you today as a guest. There are people who have been listening to me for the last 20 years, and they know you well. There are others who have come on the last 5-10 years and do not. So I just want to say that you are one of my closest friends and, in my view, one of the best market technicians I have had the honor to know and learn from. And I'm really glad to have you there as a guest.
Well, you are always kind, and you are one of my best friends. Your audience is incredibly lucky to have someone guiding them through all this who has so much integrity and honor. In the world we live in today, those are qualities that are hard to find, and also an incredible level of dedication, and I really appreciate that. You're very kind, and it's always great to talk to you, Ike.
Frank, let's start out with the stock market. The first 5 months of the year have been pretty good up so far, and in light of the rally that we had last week, I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Yes, you know, and I it's an interesting thing because I think one phenomenon that I see taking place in the stock market is a general drying up in liquidity. We are seeing a lot of really wild moves. A good example would be about 2 weeks ago when some of the retailers got hit. Dollar General, Dollar Store, they dropped $20, $30 in one day as market makers pulled bids. And then a couple of days later, they went flying back up on a different piece of news. I think these wild swings are a sign of generally liquidity getting thinner. The S&P was up 100 points on Friday, a big move. And again, I think it was a fairly illiquid market and big, which was ripe for a short squeeze. So I look at it, and to me, what I see on the S&P, I started out, oh God, 40 years ago as a youngster with Edwards and McGee, which is one of the old charting books from, it was a technical analysis of stock trends by Edwards and McGee, where they talked about chart patterns. And some people say that chart patterns don't exist, that they're just random, you know, windmills of the mind, as the critics. But, you know, if you look at the S&P, it looks like a pretty classic head and shoulder top that's developed, a big distribution top that's developed over the last year or so, basically last August to now. And we broke the neckline at about 4280. And what you're seeing now is sort of a snapback rally to the underside of that big top, not only on the S&P 500, but also on the NASDAQ, where the 12,550 area is a very well-defined resistance level. Going back to March of 2021, those lows across the March of 2022 lows. All you have to do is draw a straight horizontal line, and we're a couple hundred points. We're just a couple hundred points below that resistance. So could the rally go a little more? Maybe. It wouldn't surprise me if when people come back to work this week, you start seeing some profit taking, the momentum, the move up in the stock market starts losing momentum, and we start seeing some churning, and then at some point, a downside reversal. I would say in the much larger picture, the break that we saw earlier this year in the S&P from the absolute highs in January into the low late January, early February lows, if I were looking at this from an Elliott wave point, I would label that as wave A of a bear market down, like intermediate wave A. And then what we saw from there was an up, down, up, what's called an irregular flat that peaked in March 30th, and that would be wave B. And now what you've seen since March, the highs of late March, is a wave one down and we're finishing up a wave two back. And that means that the next thing that's likely in front of us is a third wave down. And third waves down are where bear markets do the most damage. And they can deploy, they can extend, they can become extended route declines. They can also happen very suddenly, and they could host, you know, what I would loosely describe as crash-like behavior. So the overall wave structure, price structure of the stock market is really quite symptomatic of what we're seeing in the world, which is a world where there is slowing growth, profit margin pressure coming from effectively very high embedded inflation, and a situation where central banks are wildly behind the curve. They're doing paltry moves up when inflation is the United States, it's 8%. In real world, it's probably closer to 13 or 14%. And we still have very low Fed funds rate. So we're talking about 1%. And that's not going to do anything effectively to combat, deep negative real rates. That's the whole point. And the deep negative real rate means that the inflation is becoming more embedded. And when I look at the fundamentals, the situation with diesel fuel, where it's at a 20-year low in stockpiles in the U.S., where there are a number of refineries offline, the situation with the port of Shanghai, and it's some of the neighboring ports in China where there are very few sailings, I think we're going to see more supply chain problems as we go forward. And I got to say it, this is I've seen a lot of crises and bear markets. This is the first one I've ever seen that's really scary. And I would include 2007, 2008, because from my point of view right now, this situation it's sort of brewing up as a perfect storm. And I think people have to be pretty careful with their capital right now.
Bull markets have certain characteristics that make up what I call the signature of a bull market. The same thing holds true for bear markets. And one of the characteristics of a bear market is what we call magnitude failure. And we had a few consecutive magnitude failures during the 2000-2002 bear market, and again during the 2007-2009 bear market. And what I noticed is that after two or three consecutive magnitude failures, the market embarked on a scorching rally, which failed, and ultimately the market ended up making lower lows.
Yeah, exactly. I'll give you an example. If you compute a very simple 9-day RSI, which is the Wells Wilder Relative Strength Index, that's a normalized indicator. It's on a scale of 0 to 100. And you look at the S&P's most recent decline. So this is objective. This is not an opinion. We're talking about facts here, mathematical facts. On April, I'm going to pull up the exact date, on April 28th of this year, the S&P closed at 4175.20, and the 9-day RSI was 25.84. In a bear market, you tend to get, it's called the 20-60 rule. So normally, RSI is oversold near 30, overbought near 70, and in the bear market, that tends to shift down. You start seeing the oversold readings get deeper oversold, near or under 20. Sometimes you get down into the teens, and then you come back up to 60. In the 60, instead, you stop short of the traditional 70 overbought, and 60 is where you tend to top out. Well, from that April 26 low at 4175 with the RSI at 25, we've come back up as of Friday to plus 61. And where are we right now on price? We're at 41.58. So we're actually, we've gone 20.60 on RSI, and we're losing 20-so points on the S&P. That's a sign of weakness. That means you kind of worked off the oversold condition that was there, and you're overbought now, relative overbought, and you've gained nothing. That's where you have to watch, because if this rally failed, and I would say, look at the look at the 33% retracement level, which will come in around 4,035, something like that. If we end up breaking back below that in the days and weeks ahead and start moving back under 4,000, that's going to be a sign that some kind of secondary top has developed. And that could be a prelude into a larger third wave down, which, you know, that can be a Katie bar the door type of thing. So I don't want to sound it's irresponsible, and it's not a good thing, you know, for anybody in the financial business to use hyperbole. And so I don't want to sound too bearish, but I do want to express a note of caution that for me, just looking at the price structure of the market, the way it's behaving, I see definite characteristics that look like it could be, you know, still developing in a bear market. I don't see the kinds of positive divergences which you would normally see at an important bottom, nor have I seen a number of oscillators. One that I love a lot was developed by Cynthia Case, famous crude oil trader. It's a statistical oscillator, a lot of higher math in it, but it's very, very hard to push around. And so when the market's going down, it doesn't give up. You know, to go from like minus 72 to minus 81, you can have a very big decline, and you're not getting that much more incrementally oversold. Usually you get down to readings like minus 130, minus 150 when you're pretty heavily oversold on the weekly chart. And we have seen nothing close to that yet. So that tells me that this market is, as bear markets go, it has not hit a real fear bottom. And I think that may still be in front of us. I'm concerned. Let's put it that way. I'm just concerned that that could still be in front of us. And also the multiple on the market is still too high. If we were to go to 3,400, Bank of America was saying the other day, that's like a 14 times multiple. Given the kind of backup in interest rates that we're seeing, inflation rate, yeah, this market should easily be selling at a 14 times multiple, and we're not there yet either. So I think there's a lot of reasons. If you were, and I love equities, I'd be the first one out there saying, you know, hey, it's at the right time, it's go time, let's go in and buy stocks. Stocks are great, you know, mechanism for growing wealth, unparalleled. But I think it's early, and I still think that means that investors who love equities should be careful, and they should not be really trying to buy dips. I think right now is a good time to protect your capital and keep the defense on the field. You know, you want the offense on the bench right now. Get that defense out there and stay cautious because these rallies tend to pull people in. I don't think that we're really seeing anything that should be chased. I would not be chasing this move up.
Frank, let's turn our attention to gold and gold stocks. I've known you for 30 years, and I firmly believe that not only you're the best gold and gold stock analyst I know of, but also, I mean, I do not know of anyone else who has better and more in-depth understanding of gold and gold stocks. And I know your database of historical data is probably one of the richest around. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on gold and gold stocks.
I'm one of those crazy gold bugs from the past. It's interesting because when I started out with gold, it wasn't, it didn't have anything to do with macroeconomics. Years and years ago, I worked with John Bollinger, who's an unbelievably bright, intelligent market technician, really one of the greats. And John and I did a screen. We were screening sectors, and we were trying to figure out a total return strategy where we could apply some market timing. And we found that very often, the market, there were a lot of years, and if you look historically, where the market did not go up 20%, and where a lot of sectors did not go up 20%. But if you could make 20% a year, your money doubles every 4 years. So we did the screen. We said, what goes up 20% every year without fail? And it was biotech and gold mining. And the problem with gold and biotech, when we looked at it, was that it was very erratic. It tended to shoot up and shoot down a lot, and it didn't have very good trending characteristics. But every single year, the gold stocks even if they were in a terrible year, they would usually have at least one 20% rally. So if you could get in, buy them, and then sell them, you could make your 20% and then go on vacation the rest of the year and still, you know, do that every year. It gave you that opportunity. So that's actually what attracted me in, was originally trying to grow capital and use techniques to time it. And I built out a very big database on technical indicators, which somehow throughout all the complexity of life, I have managed to keep going. I do it by hand every day, and it takes me an hour and a half pretty much every day with in terms of doing options and other indicators. And I do it because I want to keep it. It's the kind of work. One great weakness with technical analysis is that the dynamics of a market can change, and if you don't keep an eye on the actual data, you can be led astray. Like in the 70s, the good counter psychology indicator was the odd lot short ratio. Whenever the odd lot short ratio spiked up, you would see excess fear, and that would tell you there was a bottom. But then the option market came along, and it was the puts to calls ratio that sort of replaced it. And then as time has gone over, there's been a lot of different strategies that have evolved in the options market, where people are selling calls and selling puts and doing complicated trades that you kind of have to sort through, because if you're just looking at the volume of contracts now, you can get really bad data. So I do dollar-weighted option analysis, where it's actually people reaching into their wallet. If they're nervous about a market and they're hedging, or they're actually outright speculating on a market, it's a flow of funds indicator, and I like that a lot. And so it takes a lot to keep up with all this as the market changes, and I've tried to keep the work very consistent over time. But I think right now we have an interesting situation at hand, and with respect to the gold price. Now, I'm going to say this. Normally, I would be really bullish on the gold stocks. And the gold stocks, the managements have transitioned. They're in very good shape. Cash flows are at some of the best levels ever. I don't even think valuations are expensive. But if you have a precarious decline in stocks at some point, or the market becomes vulnerable to some kind of extended decline, it's conceivable that the gold stocks could go down with the stock market in sort of a liquidity vacuum. And so you're at a stage of the cycle where the metal could decouple from the gold stocks, at least temporarily, and then the gold stocks would probably come roaring back. So I'm easing away from the gold stocks right now. I don't have positions there, but I am interested in the metal. And the metal is, I'm going to give you a statistic. It has, if you go back and you look at bull markets, gold over a very long period of time, I went back daily to early 1968 on physical gold, and about the average standard deviation of up days. I looked it up in 6,832 up days in the physical gold market, out of a total of 13,709 trading days since April 1st of 1968, which is the first day gold became tradable. It's about 49.83% of the time it has been positive. The average daily up day for gold is 0.82%, a little less than 1% of just looking at the up days. If you look at two standard deviations on that, that's 1.63, a day where it's up 1.63%, and 3 sigma is 2.45%. If you go back and you look at back-to-back 3 sigma days, that is a little bit of a rarity, and when that happens, when you get back-to-back very strong up days, in this case for my study, I used back-to-back two standard deviation days, which in today's market with gold around $1,852, 2% day is about $38, so about $76 on the gold price in 2 days. When you look at that, that has been a kickoff in the early stages of a bull leg. And the good example for would be if you went back August 31st of 2020 and September 1st of 2020, you had back-to-back really strong days. Also, April 13th, 2020, April 14th, 2020, we have not seen a strong back-to-back pair of up days in gold for what is now 2,729 trading days. That is the longest streak gold has ever gone since 1968 without seeing 2 days of back-to-back a big percentage up day, at least 2% or more. And that tells me that that is, at this point, I think that's becoming way overdue. The prior and only comparable longest streak was 1,933 days between September 4th of 1990 and April 3rd of 1998. What I see happening in gold is, as it's come down from the highs of 2070, the puts to calls ratio dollar weighted has swung from very low, which was very optimistic, to now very, very high, and that's very fearful. I keep a gauge called selling intensity, which has also swung 180 degrees. And medium-term RSI has come down and is at least consistent with a number of prior medium-term lows. So I think the technical setup is there in gold. We could get a couple of short-term down days in here to retest the lows, maybe a partial retest, a move maybe down towards 1825 in the next couple of days. But I really would not be surprised if somewhere in here over the next 2 weeks, we hit some kind of really inflective bottom in gold, and then we lift off and we start to see those two back-to-back strong 2% days. That would be a sign of a kickoff. And I think under the circumstances, heading into the summer with crude oil firming up, with these big shortages in diesel fuel, possibly a further spike in energy prices, there's a point here where the money is just going to start to move at precious metals and say, you know what, this is a hedge against inflation. It's real money. That's the thing about gold. It has properties that make it a good form of money, an indisputably good form of money. That's why it's been around for a millennium. And I think under these circumstances, it's really primed to go. And for your audience, I want to stay as humble as possible and say, you know, for the stock market, be cautious. For gold, take a look. Don't put a lot of money in gold ever at any one time. But what you can do is make a buy and layer it. You buy a little today, you watch it a little bit, you buy a little later on, you ease your way into the market over time, and that way you don't get shaken out of a trade. But I think having a position, taking advantage of this weakness that we've seen recently on gold and beginning to move some money in at these levels, to me it makes a lot of sense. I think it'll help people with peace of mind because, you know, commodities are very funny things. They can be very, very quiet, very, very quiet, and then all of a sudden, bam, there's a trigger, and they're up and out the starting gate before you even realize it. So, and that's okay to buy up as well as to buy down, but this is a good opportunity, I think, right now for people to look at making some kind of an investment and maybe an early stage investment in precious metals. And I like gold the best right now because it's not an industrial metal. Silver has industrial with a slowing economy that can play a little havoc with silver, although I think silver might be okay. I would stay away from platinum and palladium. So to me, the gold looks like the right way to go.
Any last thoughts on bonds?
It's the same sort of thing we're seeing there. The bonds have had a very gradual pullback from like 3.2% to 2.75% on the 10-year yield. But again, from where momentum peaked a number of weeks ago, those were at 274. So you've had a very, very gentle correction in a downside pullback in yields, which has relieved an overbought reading. And it's setting up what I think is another bottom in bond yields and a spike up. And if we move through 3.25%, you're going to be pushing the 10-year bond yield to a 10-year high. And that, I think, would be a big red flag. That could be a moment where the stock market looks at that and says, oh, I don't like this. This inflation is really embedded. It's forcing yields up, and we live in a very financialized global economy where higher yields, it's sort of the reverse of everything that was going well. Yields put pressure on asset prices. They put pressure on valuations. So to me, the yields look like they're still in an uptrend. And I think that's not a good sign for bonds, even though I do understand that bonds have come down a lot. Some people are looking at maybe an early recession trade. I think that's too soon to be extending duration in bonds. I think TIPS are still good because as inflation is high, you're collecting a coupon and you're getting some better relative protection in TIPS. And that's really the only spot I would be looking at in the bond area right now.
Frank, anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, I'm good, buddy. I think we covered a lot, but it's always great to hear your voice. And I just want to say, I hope your audience, they listen carefully because you really have done a great job over the years. And I know you're always trying your best to help people move forward.
Thank you, Frank. Good talking. We'll be right back.